This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, July 19, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. It was a tough weekend for the New York Mets. On Friday, Francisco Lindor got hurt during their loss against the Pirates, wincing after he bounced out to second base in the fifth inning. He took a few steps and then turned off to the Mets dugout. He was placed on the injured list Saturday with an oblique injury. And then on Saturday, this is how that game ended.
Here's the pitch. Swinging a fly ball to left. Down the line. And this one is going to stink out of here. He just hit a walk-off grand slam. Wow! Jacob Stallings has led the comeback for the Pirates.
First grand slam ever. There it is.
That from Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan. The Pirates win that game 9-7. And the Mets already, besides losing Francisco Lindor, were staring at the specter of losing Jacob deGrom, who played catch the other day and felt tightness in his right forearm. Well, he was placed on the injured list on Sunday. Luis Rojas, the Mets manager, labeled deGrom's injury day-to-day. We'll have to wait and see exactly where that stands as we move forward. And then early in Sunday's game, the Mets fell behind the Pirates 6-0 on a crazy play.
And a swing and a little number right up the third baseline.
Fair ball.
And he threw, it toward the dugout. Here comes one run to score.
Polanco. Maybe another one. Here comes another run.
The ball is still just sitting there, but the on-deck circle. Three runs are going to score on a ball that went 10 feet.
That's right. That was the call, a 93.7 FN. The Fan in Pittsburgh. Let's see what it sounded like on WCBS, the Mets flagship station.
The ball's in a strike pitch. Newman, it's a slow chopper up the third base side. Walker picks it up in foul territory. Actually, they're going to say it's a fair ball, and Walker flipped it toward the Pirate dugout, and two runs have scored. Here comes a third man, Perez, on his way to the plate. Nobody's picked up the ball. Perez scores, and the Pirates have a 6-0 lead. Taijuan Walker is saying that was a foul ball. Luis Rojas is out arguing with the home plate umpire, Jeremy Riggs, as Walker flipped that ball, thinking it was foul. Rojas has just been tossed out of the game, and he is heated. This is as hot as we've seen Luis Rojas since managing the Mets. He is all over Jeremy Riggs. Larry Vanover, the crew chief, has come over, and Louis has got to be careful here. He just shoved Larry Vanover to try to get closer to Jeremy Riggs, and Luis Rojas is still in the place of the home plate umpire. Dave Joust and Gary DeSarcina have come over. Tomas Nito as well, to get Luis Rojas out of there.
Yeah, it was an ugly scene right there. Luis Rojas bumping the home plate umpire made the call. And replay, by the way, showed that was the correct call. Luis Rojas probably facing discipline, suspension, a fine as we move forward. But in this game, the Mets would come all the way back. Top of the ninth inning, they trail Pittsburgh 6-5.
Conforto, it's a high fly ball, deep center field. Reynolds is back at the wall. It is gone! A home run! Michael Conforto gives the Mets the lead. A two-run homer to straightaway center field off of Richard Rodriguez. And the Mets have come all the way back from a 6-0 deficit. They have taken a 7-6 lead here in the top of the ninth.
That, of course, from WCBS. We're going to be talking about the Mets situation coming up with Hall of Fame nominee Tim Kirkjian. It was a dangerous and scary scene Saturday in Washington. In the sixth inning, this is what it sounded like in the ballpark.
As they tack on three insurance runs on five hits, all singles. And one man left.
Yeah, repeated gunshots that happened just outside the third base gates at the ballpark in Washington. Fans began to move away from that area, some going down into the dugouts to get through the runway. The game was suspended in that moment. And on Sunday, before they picked up the game, the suspended game, Dave Martinez, the Nationals manager, talked about his feelings.
I love this city. You know, the city is my home. It can get crazy. We all know that. And we all want to feel safe. I can tell you that inside this ballpark, I feel safer than ever. I really do. We care about each other. We don't want anybody getting hurt. So, like I said, for me yesterday, I try to protect as many people as possible.
Here was Padres manager Jace Tingler.
You know, it's a nightmare. It's the thing maybe you think about in the back of your mind. We got the guys, you know, as quick as we could. You know, you're getting off the field and trying to get them in the dugout and get them in and just a lot going on. And then it dawns on you, the bullpen guys and the families and just moms, dads, brothers, children, you know, it's a lot.
Padres and Nationals had a crazy back and forth game yesterday. Juan Soto getting a big hit.
Swing and a fly ball to deep left. Moving back on it, Profar, the warning track at the wall. It is gone! Goodbye! Bang! Zoom goes the magic wand. Soto with an opposite field two-run homer.
That was Charlie Slows on the Nationals Radio Network. Washington wins that game 8-7. Lance Lynn got a 2-year, $38 million extension with the Chicago White Sox. Blue Jays, Rangers, and the Blue Jays had a great day, capped off by Vladimir Guerrero.
Guerrero turns on one, hits it to deep left field, and gone right on out of the ballpark for his second home run of the game.
Dan Shulman with that call. Sportsnet 590, the fan, the Blue Jays sweep that doubleheader. So while Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at this point, you know, has a chance for the Triple Crown, he is behind in home runs to a certain member of the Los Angeles Angels.
Next delivery, that's hit well in the right center field, and that one is out of here. Ohtani hits home run number 34 of the season, a two-run shot. Angels get a little bit closer. It's now 7-4 Seattle.
Yeah, the Angels would lose the game 7-4, but Ohtani with another home run. Angels radio AM 830. Last night in the Bronx, Yankees, Red Sox, and Gleyber Torres got the Yankees going.
Now the lefty ready to go to pitch. Swing a high fly ball ripped into left. Driving back for Dugo, back to the wall, and kiss that one goodbye. Well, he did it last night, and he strikes again on Sunday night. Gleyber Torres with his fifth home run, maybe starting to get back into a groove, and the Yankees lead it 1-0.
Dave O'Brien on ESPN Radio with that call. Yeah, Gleyber Torres, one of the Yankees, who's having a down season, has hit home runs the last two games. The Red Sox threatened in the top of the sixth inning. Chad Green came in from the Yankees bullpen.
1-2 pitch. Swing, ground ball to third. Snagged by LeMahieu. He steadies, throws, and gets him at first base, and the Yankees get out of it. The Red Sox threatened, but strand runners at second and third.
The Red Sox bullpen would completely melt down in the late innings. The Yankees win that game 9-1. And somehow, despite all their injuries, the COVID situation, they took 2 of 3 from Boston in this series. And before we get to Tim to talk about that, I want to tell you, 30 for 30 is back with Breakaway, a film about WNBA superstar and activist Maya Moore. This film explores the story of Moore, one of the best basketball players in the world, stepping away from the sport for a remarkable reason: to fight for a man she believed was wrongly imprisoned. Stream Breakaway now, only on ESPN+.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Our new introduction music for Hall of Fame nominee, Tim Kirkjian. Tim, we had so much fun after hearing this news. And, of course, Taylor and I talked about we got to have a new open when we get a Hall of Fame nominee. Congratulations.
Well, thank you, Buster. That's very kind of you to change the open here. I'm thrilled beyond words. I don't dispute that. And I'm a speechless on this whole topic. This is just the highest honor a baseball writer can get. And just to be nominated is something that I'm just so thrilled about. I can't even begin to tell you. Thank you.
Were there enough trumpets in there for you? Okay. In that open?
Yeah, there were plenty, and no one's done a trumpet for me in a long time. So that's good. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, as your friend, as your colleague, I hope that lots of trumpets for you happen for you next summer. As someone said at the baseball writers meeting last week, apparently, who's going to vote against Tim Kirkjian? All right. So tell me what happened on that crazy play in the Mets game yesterday, please. Can you please explain?
No, I can't, Buster, because it's another case of a player deciding to be an umpire on a certain play instead of being a player on a certain play. Sorry, what is Taiwan Walker doing there? If you're going to try to sweep the ball away, make sure the ball is foul, which was not foul. It was close, but it's a fair ball. And then after you sweep it away from home plate like that, then you go argue with the umpire while the ball is sitting there. Three runners scored on a 40-foot swinging bunt down the third baseline. We are so bad in our game these days about paying attention to where the ball is. It's just inexcusable that three runs could score on a ball like that when ultimately he made a mistake on a fair ball, and then he compounded the mistake by not going after it. I'm not sure what he was thinking there.
I would say this, in watching that play, I had great pride as a Vanderbilt alum, because you know who was all over that play was the Pirates third base coach, Joey Cora.
Of course, and he was waving everyone home, but only one run should have scored on that play, because if Taiwan Walker wants to catch that ball foul, catch it. Don't sweep it towards the dugout and knock it 40 feet away so the other two guys can score. But no surprise whatsoever that Joey Cora was waving everyone in, because he was one of the few guys on the field that understood exactly what was going on there.
That's right. And I talked to Alex Cora, the Red Sox manager, Joey's brother, before the Red Sox and Yankee game last night. He had such pride. He was like, Joey was all over it. Like Joey had that thing. Yeah. Like he was completely into it. And I do also appreciate, I'm sure you do too, the self-effacing David Cohn, who immediately tweeted out about the play that he had very similar when he was pitching for the Mets and he was going against the Atlanta Braves. And he was arguing with the first base umpire on a play, whether or not he touched first base. And meanwhile, two more runs scored as he was arguing. And that is a play that you see in blooper reels all over baseball. So not a surprise to him that David Cohn stepped up and was like, yeah, I've been there, done that.
Right. Typical David Cohn. He's so good about it, about his career and about his mistakes, even though there weren't that many. I'm just saying, Buster, these mistakes like yesterday, they happen more often than they used to. And that concerns me.
So on the way home for the Mets, a consolation prize, because Michael Conforto hits the home run in the last inning. The Mets pull out the final game of that series. But overall, the weekend events, absolute body blow for the Mets. If you start with this, Jacob deGrom goes on the injured lists with right forearm tightness. You and I both know what the euphemism of right forearm tightness is. Potentially an elbow problem. And I've said it 1,000 times. I'll say it again. Teams don't have to tell us exactly what's going on with these players with their injuries. The players don't have to tell us, and we don't have to believe what they're telling us. But I know this, Tim, you talk to folks with other teams and they're seeing a lot of stuff adding up for Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah, and we should all be worried about this because he's the best pitcher in baseball. He's appointment viewing. He's absolutely dazzling, and they need to make sure he's okay now because coming out of three different games this year with assorted injuries is enough of a red flag, but you have to put him on the IL, which they did, and get it straight exactly what's wrong with him. And every time we hear forearm, it turns out to be almost the same thing. I mean, Tyler Glass now went down forearm this year, and who knows when he's going to pitch again. The Mets can't win anything this year without DeGrom at his very best. And right now there's a huge question about that. So I'm not sure what they do except for give him 10 days, see what it looks like, and then pray that this is something minor. But forearm rarely becomes something minor.
Everybody in baseball has had so much fun watching him pitch this year. And so you hope this is just a, you know, a short stint on the injured list. He comes back and he finishes an historic season. But let's face it, on the face of it, the information we do know, it's concerning. And this has always been in the back of my head, Tim, you know, based on conversations I've had with surgeons, you know, James Andrews and others. When we talk about Tommy John surgery, the general rule of thumb is that if you have a Tommy John surgery, you got about 7 years before the tread on the tire might be compromised. And that's when maybe, you know, you're at risk for another one. Those, the elbow holds up about 7 years. Jacob DeGrom had his Tommy John surgery in 2010, which means we're 7 years plus four at this point. And I thought about that as I watched him with that incredible high velocity he's thrown this year, the incredible precision he's thrown with this year. I just don't know if it can last.
Yeah, it's a huge concern, Buster. And I've talked to others about Tommy John. And yes, you're right. This thought, you get it once, you're good. It doesn't work that way. Ask Johnny Ventures and a bunch of other guys. It doesn't work that way. And look, there's nothing to take away from what Jacob DeGrom has done this year. It's been remarkable. But let's just understand that Bob Gibson, who had the 1.12 in 1968, threw 304 innings that year. He did what he did in 304 innings. And it just shows you how important durability is for a pitcher. But Bob Gibson wasn't throwing 101 miles an hour with max velocity on every single pitch like Jacob DeGrom was. And I think that's what leads to our injuries. And Buster, somebody's going to have to come up with a better way to just evaluate, are these pitchers getting hurt by throwing this way? Because way too many star players, especially pitchers, are on the injured list.
Yep. And I'm sure that that'll be part of the conversation with DeGrom, you know, moving forward and what they're going to do there. For the Mets, there's a larger conversation to be had about what they should do leading up to the trade deadline. We've got 11 days to go. Over the weekend, Francisco Lindor goes down with an oblique injury. I didn't see anybody with the Mets who actually put a timeline on this. But generally speaking, that's a 4 to 6 week injury, which means that they not only don't have Jacob DeGrom, but they don't have Francisco Lindor, who, you know, despite his offensive ups and downs, he's been terrific defensively, and he is a leader on that team. And it leaves the question of, you know, what sort of moves could they make, should they make? Our colleague Jeff Passan was on with you and Carl, Doug Glanville on Baseball Tonight yesterday. And, you know, he mentioned, he's, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, hey, I don't know, you know, exactly how good the Mets are, effectively asking the question of whether or not you know, they're worth investing in, considering where they are and with the injuries they have. I got to say, when I heard that, I was like, that might be how the front office people feel, Tim, but that's not going to be how the owner, Steve Cohen, feels. Like, he is on record talking about winning a championship within 5 years. They spent a lot of money in the offseason. He's made a big splash. This is his first trade deadline. He's not going to stand by and watch them do little to nothing. Because, hey, and oh, by the way, they're in first place as we talk by two games. They're not just going to squander that thinking that, you know what, we're not good enough.
Yeah, and Steve Cohen is the wild card here, and he's the owner of the team. And I refuse to believe that he's just going to say, all right, we'll make a couple small changes here. He wants to win, and he wants to win right now. And he better understand, and I know he does, the Phillies, for all their warts, are starting to move a little bit here, and they're not going to give up at the trade deadline. And even though the Braves are in big trouble with injuries, they're not giving up at the deadline either, and neither are the Nationals. That's why the Mets have to go do something. And again, I don't know if Chris Bryant's even available. I don't know how much it's going to take to get him, but they need Chris Bryant or someone of that ilk in the middle of that order. And then they have to get DeGrom healthy. Then they have to get Lindor back. Then they can make a run at a nationally, you know, something good in October. Steve Cohen is not going to sit around and let this team founder and not make the playoffs.
We've been talking in recent weeks how their focus to this point has been on a starting pitcher. And I don't know exactly who they're locked in on, but let's face it, the Kyle Gibson of the Rangers might make some sense. You know, Jose Barrios, if the Twins decided to sell players or under control beyond this year, I was told over the weekend that's not their attitude right now. But I'll double down on what you just said about the other teams in the division. We've already seen the Braves and how Alex Anthopoulos, their general manager, is going to handle this year's deadline. You know, he obviously is well aware of, you know, the loss of Ronald Acuna Jr. and not having Marcell Ozuna for the rest of the year and losing Mike Soroka for the rest of the year. He understands how devastating those injuries are. But he also knows that they're going to have Travis d'Arnaud back. They're going to have Enoa back, and that'll probably be those two guys back in their lineup sometime in the first couple weeks of August. And I think he feels like he has an obligation to his players to run out the ground ball, Tim. You know, we always talk about effort level among players. You know, hit a ground ball to shortstop, you should run hard. I think the same is true for general managers. And that's what we saw Alex do over the last 4 days. Go out and make a deal for Jock Peterson. Go out and make a deal for Stephen Vogt. Now, are those guys difference-making players? Probably not. It probably isn't going to make a difference. The Braves are probably, you know, too flawed and they had too many injuries, but they're going to try. And you and I, you mentioned about the Phillies. Do you think their owner, John Middleton, who is desperate to win, you know, it's been so long, more than a decade since the Phillies have sniffed October, or about a decade, does anybody think that John Middleton is going to stand down? And Dave Dombrowski, first year being general manager of the Phillies or head of baseball operations, this is someone who someday, like you, is going to make a speech in Cooperstown. He's, you know, won championships before. Does anybody think he's not going to go out and make a big deal? He's excellent at trade deadline deals. And you know Mike Rizzo, the general manager of the Nationals, if he has a sniff that they could be in the race and, you know, at some point they'll get Kyle Schwarber back, they've got a veteran team, you know, guys like Max Scherzer. Does anybody think those three good teams are just going to stand down and wait for the Mets to, you know, get their injured guys back?
No, you're right, Buster. The three general managers chasing the Mets are three of the most aggressive guys out there, and they are not going to stop short when they have a chance to do this. So I'm a big believer in those three teams, not on the field, but the GMs are going to get something done here because it's Dave Dombrowski's time of year, Mike Rizzo's time of year, and Alex Anthopoulos' time of year. So this will be fascinating to watch.
All right, let's just touch on the rest of the trade market, teams that potentially could be aggressive or not aggressive. I saw the Red Sox over the weekend. That, to me, Tim, that's an interesting team to watch leading the trade deadline, because when I look at their situation, you know, the players they have in their lineup, Chris Sale coming back. And let me tell you, the stuff I was hearing yesterday about Chris Sale, they are so excited about what he might bring to the table in terms of how well he's throwing. To me, that's a team that absolutely should be aggressive. You know, the question is whether or not owner John Henry is going to step in and say, hey, let's go. You know, let's call the Cubs and let's talk about a Craig Kimbrel deal. Let's talk about a deal that, you know, maybe it's a twofer and you go and get Anthony Rizzo to play first base.
Yeah, and they have to get somebody to play first base, Buster. As you saw last night, you reported, you know, Christian Arroyo played first base last night because they need somebody else to help Bobby Dalbec down there because he has so much trouble, especially against right-handed hitters. They have to go get a left-handed hitter, at least a platoon at first base. Look, this is a really good offensive team, but they've lost 6 out of 8 and haven't hit and been chasing balls out of the strike zone. And that pitching, which has been so much better, has not been good these last 8 games. And I can't imagine the Red Sox just sitting around doing nothing now. They have to get better if they're going to win this division. They have to get better if they're going to hang on and make the playoffs. And Buster, I've seen this a million times, and so have you. Inside the clubhouse, when the players recognize the GM's trying to make us better, they're going after people, it changes the look of the clubhouse and the feel of the clubhouse. But when they sit there and say, look, our ownership doesn't even think we can win, we're not going to do anything to help our team, that's a big letdown. So I don't think the Red Sox are going to let their team stumble for another 2 weeks. They're going to go do something at the deadline. And I think they have to, if they're going to win that division.
And when you look at the landscape of baseball, if you are the Red Sox and if Chris Sale is as good as they believe that he is, and he doesn't have any kind of setbacks as he comes back from his Tommy John surgery, and if they were to go out and, let's say, make a deal with the Cubs for Craig Kimbrell and Anthony Rizzo, you agree? That's a team that could win the World Series.
Absolutely. Chris Sale told me in spring training, Buster, he's the most competitive guy in the world. You know that. He told me, he said, I have the sharpest knife in the drawer right now, and I can't wait to use it. And the knife, of course, is his left arm because he was throwing in spring training. And imagine bringing that guy in to join the rotation or join the bullpen or do something, given his competitive nature. Imagine that guy coming into a game and everyone looks around and goes, hey, Chris Sale's back. Huge boost for the Red Sox. And yes, they're a championship caliber team. They're a World Series team if they do something major at first base, add another pitcher, and get Chris Sale back.
You know Alex Cora like I know Alex. I got to believe that as the Red Sox left Yankee Stadium last night, part of him was seething that they lost two or three games to that Yankee team that was, you know, as one official with the Yankees referred to them, the B-bombers.
Because as you know, they're starting out.
You have all these call-ups, all these, you know, guys called promoted from AAA because they've lost all these outfielders. And they, you know, not only they take two or three from the Red Sox, but they blow them out in the final game of the series, thanks to Jameson Taillon and his strong effort on the mound.
Yeah, and as you know, their starting outfield last night for the New York Yankees had 12 career home runs. The last time the Yankees started an outfield with fewer than 12 career homers was in 1991 with young Bernie Williams, Hensley Mullins, and Mike Humphreys. I mean, that's a long time ago, and these are the Yankees. And to win two out of three and score nine runs last night, sure, I'm sure Alex is thinking, we got to upgrade this team if we're going to win this division, and I think they will. But their GM is not exactly built to trade to get people at the deadline. Would you agree?
Yeah, Chaim Bloom, head of baseball ops for the Red Sox. You know, he was with the Tampa Bay Rays. And I think that's, you know, a question a lot of his peers have. How aggressive will he be? You know, will he look for incremental type moves, or will he, could he potentially step forward and make the big move? That's why I think everyone wonders, you know, how much John Henry, Tom Werner, the owners get involved in this conversation about what to do. I feel like with the Yankees, I mean, you and I, we've always seen those medical shows where, you know, someone is has a heart attack and they bring in the paddles and they apply it. It's like clear. Well, they have a heartbeat, Tim. We wondered if at the end of this weekend, if they would have a heartbeat. They have a heartbeat.
They do. And as long as they have a heartbeat and as long as the expectations are as high as they were to start the season, they can't give up either. You can't be the New York Yankees, have a chance to at least win a wild card when you haven't won the World Series since 2009 and not do something. So Joey Gallo, Kyle Gibson, somebody, anybody to help that team. It has to be done. My question for you, Buster, is do they have enough to deal to get a primary player in the trademark? Do they have enough in the minor leagues? Will Brian Cashman deal that guy? Do they have anyone on the major league level that can really help them get somebody and still keep them to be a playoff team? I don't know.
No, I don't necessarily think so. In terms of a big name, I was a little bit surprised that they weren't the team to land Jock Peterson. You know, because all the Braves basically gave up was money. You know, they essentially agreed to the Cubs, hey, we'll take the other $4 million on Jock Peterson's salary. They gave up a third-tier prospect that, you know, that the Yankees certainly have those type of players. And I was surprised that they didn't go after Stephen Vogt, you know, who was available. It was a left-handed hitting catcher, you know, for the Yankees. They've had that balance in their lineup and those questions. those to me, you know, a couple deals that I incremental type deals that I think would have been nice for the Yankees. I want to ask you about something that happened on Saturday at Yankee Stadium and how you feel about this. On its face, the moment it happened, you're like, oh, that's ugly. That's horrible. Alex Verdugo threw a ball into the stands, tried to throw it to a kid. It was intercepted by another fan. He turned his back, and a little while later, that baseball hit him in the back. And the fan, he had quickly identified the fan who threw the baseball. The fan was kicked out of the ballpark on Saturday. And then on Sunday, we learned that he's been banned for life in all ballparks. Here's something that I started to hear yesterday, Tim, and it was reported by NJ.com first, I think, that there's a lot of feeling of the people around there. And I heard this from a Yankees official yesterday, that the guy didn't necessarily throw it at him on purpose. He was just following that fan tradition of throwing baseballs back onto the field. If it comes, you know, a home run hit by the opposing team, or maybe, you know, in this case, Verdugo, a Red Sox player, throwing the ball in the stands, and the fans around were sort of chanting and apparently, you know, telling him, hey, throw it back, and he did, and he accidentally hit Verdugo. I given that practice goes on, it seems like every game, to me, it's more complicated than just simply saying, okay, anybody who throws a ball, that's it. You better figure this out in coming up with a rule that applies to everybody.
Yeah, it seems a little unusual that he didn't mean to throw it at him and then he hit him right in the middle of the back. But I'm going to believe to some degree that the eyewitness who said, I promise you he didn't do this on purpose. But the bottom line is, Buster, you can't throw a baseball on the field. You can't. And if you're going to be intimidated by throw it back, which we need to get rid of, just give the ball to a little kid in the stands and don't throw it back on the field, because this guy's going to get in big trouble for that. He already is. So let's find a better way to do this. Let's not throw the ball back on the field. Let's give it to someone in the stands who might actually take it home and really want it, meaning a kid. Seems logical to me.
Well, maybe then we ought to have an announcement, you know, in all 30 ballparks, that if you throw a ball back on the field, you potentially could face a ban for life from all ball fields. Yes?
Right. I'm with you. Someone should announce that, because a player got hurt or mildly hurt, and it's unacceptable to throw something on the field and hit a player, period, accidental or not. So let's make an announcement and let's keep the balls in the stands.
Last one for you. Hearing a lot of stuff over the last week where you have opposing players, opposing managers looking at pitchers and wondering if we're starting to see the return of sticky stuff. Pitcher, you know, rubbing in a weird place on his leg, a pitcher rubbing repeatedly on his crotch, you know, a pitcher running his hands through his hair repeatedly. There are concerns among some teams that the crackdown has not been as vigilant as it's been at the outset. What do you think?
Well, the story has slowed down significantly, and I'm just not sure it's because nobody has any sticky stuff on them. You got to think there. Look, guys have been trying to get an advantage in baseball for 150 years, not to mention every other sport. Every athlete's trying to find a way to do better, to win more, whatever it takes. And I'm sure there are some pitchers who are trying to circumvent the process and hide some sticky stuff somewhere. I'm a little naive to these things. I'm thinking, how stupid could you be to get caught on something like this? But pitchers have ways to do things. So I think we need to remain vigilant. If you want to stop this from happening, you're going to have to keep checking. Sometimes you're going to have to check in a few more sensitive places. We'll see where this goes, but I'm not convinced that all pitchers have said, this is not worth it. I'm not carrying anything sticky to the mound.
Tim, I hope the managers step up and begin to challenge some of these things that they're seeing and ask the umpires to do checks, because I worry that we're going to drift right back into that old gentleman's agreement. If people are seeing, you know, what I'm hearing about, and I know, for example, in the case of one pitcher, multiple teams have noted this and no one is going to the umpire and asking something, that we're going to drift right back to where we were.
Well, remember how much heat Joe Girardi took for asking to have Max Scherzer checked for a third time. I'm not sure managers are wilting because of that, but I'm wondering if they're putting up a big enough fight on this. It'll be real interesting to see what happens with most of our pitchers. It's a very difficult spot.
All right, Tim. We will work on doubling, tripling down our trumpet section for you by the time we get to next summer.
Thank you, Buster. I'll see you soon.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, efoxolanir, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious, beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
I got a chance to catch up with all-star shortstop Xander Bogaerts of the Red Sox. Rapid fire.
Tell us about the home run cart celebration.
That's something I think Plawecki was the first one that came up with that. Obviously, we've never done anything like that. We had a tunnel. I think we had a tunnel before. The cart was, I mean, they just kind of took it another step further. But, yeah, I think Plawecki was the one that started that.
How much fun do you guys have with that?
It's fun. You know, I mean, sometimes it's tough when you're losing, like, 12-1, you know, and someone hit a home run, you have to do it, you know. I just think the timing with that is a little bit awkward, but for the most part this year, we've been having a lot of fun, especially because we've been winning a lot of games or close enough in the games, you know, where the celebration is much worth it.
Describe the impact of Alex Cora as manager.
I mean, it's huge. You know, there's a lot of guys that didn't know him, you know, or didn't have a type of relationship with him. Some guys that played with him in the past, some guys that he knows when they were kids and stuff like that. But I think he's just been very, very positive, you know. Him being able to know pretty much most of the team, it's pretty much the same team. Basically, the core guys and stuff like that, just some new additions. And just building those relationships and those trust early on with those guys, I think makes them feel much more comfortable. And as I said, we know him pretty well, and we know what type of guy shows up and manages us every day, you know. So it's been really fun.
You drove the extension talks when you signed that multi-year deal with the Red Sox, essentially working with a trusted friend in the organization to kick it off. What was your thinking?
I mean, we had something very special going on here, you know, and this organization that I've been since I was a kid, they gave me my first chance, you know. And as I said, we had something really special coming off of that World Series, and we had a lot of players that I've played with here throughout the years, and felt like we were going to have this thing for a while. You know, we're kind of like a dynasty. And I'm kind of like the lonely ranger, the lone one left. You know, there's a lot of guys that went on, signed other places, doing good in other places, other cities, guys that got traded afterwards. So, I mean, it kind of changed quickly, you know, but it's nothing that beats winning, and that's what we're doing right now after a tough year last year.
Give me a home run call for Rafael Devers.
A home run call? Let me see. Raphael with a big swing, going back, and it's gone. 4-run homer.
Now give it to me in Spanish.
In Spanish? Rafael Devers conecta la pelota, atrás, y se fue la bola.
Give it to me in Dutch.
Taarslag, Rafael Devers de bal en hij gaat achter, en het is uit. Een vierde slag voor Devers.
Papiamento.
Rafael Devers la bate, het is swing duro. Bala tabay atrás, ayo! Bala bay!
How old were you when you mastered 4 languages?
I think Spanish was the last one I mastered. I knew pretty much the other 3 well. But when I was in high school, I kind of dropped Spanish. I told the teacher I wouldn't need it. So I don't understand why I need to take class. And then I end up signing with the Red Sox and I had to go to the Dominican. So me knowing English and they knowing Spanish, it kind of helped me learn a lot also to learn their language much better, because I kind of knew like the basic stuff, but not a lot. But being able to translate for those guys, that helped me a lot.
You and Devers are the first left side teammates to be voted as starters of the All-Star game. You were voted as starters of the All-Star game since Alex Rodriguez and Derek Jeter. How meaningful is that for you?
Yeah, I didn't know those are the guys. Obviously, those guys were tremendous, man, and they have a tremendous career. They were amazing. It's unbelievable, you know, what we've been able to accomplish so far since he's been up in the big leagues. You know, I go back to that 2019 season. We had a really good one, you know, and we kind of push each other a lot in a positive way. You know, there's no hate, there's no jealousy. It's just sometimes we see the ability in each other that, hey, you can do more, you know, and go after it. You know, just don't be happy. Don't be complacent with just being okay. You know, that we see and we notice each other that, hey, you have more in you, so go ahead and achieve it. You know, and this year he's been a lot on me, which I really appreciate, especially kind of making errors and stuff like that early on. I was making a couple of errors, and I look over there, I'm like, man, you know, he's come a long way, you know, because when he's younger he wouldn't do that, you know, like, come on Bogey. But now you can see he's getting that confidence and feeling comfortable of being a big league player and someone that a lot of guys look up to.
Who was your favorite player growing up?
Okay, I have to say Derek Jeter, because he was a shortstop, but Andrew Jones, man. Andrew Jones was, I remember when I was a kid, I used to score games, and all the games I would watch was Atlanta, because he was from Curacao, so we would have a lot of games from Atlanta on TBS. I think that's the channel that it was on at that time at TBS. Yeah. So we would play a lot of Braves games, and man, Andrew Jones was unbelievable. Sometimes now when I shag in the outfielder and I see a fly ball coming, I'm like, hey, Andrew Jones here, you know, and I show them the way he catches the ball. But he for sure, especially because I kind of felt like I had that close connection of us being close with countrywide, you know.
Your first home run of your career was in Yankee Stadium. What do you remember about that?
It was my mom's birthday. It was my mom's birthday, September the 7th. I remember it was a day game. I remember it was a pitcher. I think his name was Miller. His last name might be Miller. I don't even really remember him. But I remember I got a cramp, too. If you look at that video good, I kind of have a little grimace on my face after I hit it. I kind of get a lot of cramps in day games and stuff like that sometimes, but I kind of had a little cramp there. So sometimes people think I was like pimping it, but I had a cramp and it kind of went after that. So it was a special day, my mom's birthday.
When did you realize that the predictions of idiots like me about the 2021 Red Sox were going to be dead wrong?
to be realistic, after that 90-game winning streak. You know, I've got to be realistic. You know, coming into the season, we know we have the potential to be okay, to be good, you know. But I don't think no one saw us being this good, you know. And let's just be realistic. But after that 9-game winning streak, it was just about showing up every day and being able to overcome what we did with the Orioles, because they swept us at home our first three games, you know, and it was kind of a slap in the face. You know, and everyone was getting on, it's like, oh, here we go with the Red Sox again, you know, the same as 2020, nothing changed. And that 9-game win streak, I think, helped boost a lot of the other guys' confidence, and the mindset just definitely changed from there on, and we continue playing real well.
You made me feel better, Xander. Thank you. I appreciate you doing this.
You got it. Thank you. Thank you, guys. I'll see you guys.
I talked to Yankees outfielder Aaron Judge before the All-Star break. Aaron Judge was adopted when he was little, and I asked him a question about that. Give a listen.
Tell me about your bubblegum superstition.
It's something I've been doing for a while. I think I've been doing that since, I think, college. You know, start the game, two pieces of gum, you know, chewing on it. You know, after my first at bat, if I get a hit, you know, we hold on to the gum. But if I get out, you know, it can't be my fault I got out there. It can't be my fault I grounded out. So I got to get rid of that gum and grab a new piece and, you know, kind of start it over. So if I'm having a good day, usually I got a pretty nasty piece of gum at the end of the game.
You were a three-sport star. When you were 12 or 13 years old, which of the three sports did you have the most passion for?
Well, it was a fight between basketball and baseball. Basketball, I love playing. That's probably one of the first sports I played growing up. But then once I started playing baseball, I fell in love with that instantly. You know, just the chess match, the game within the game, you know, little things that people usually don't see that actually – you know, end up making a difference between a win or a loss. It's just little things like that that really just, you know, kind of drew me into the game of baseball. You know, you can't really run out the clock in baseball either. You know, you got to play all 9 innings, you got to get all 3 outs, and I've always liked that part of it.
You had college offers to play tight end. You preferred wide receiver. What was your thinking?
I just like wide receiver because usually the cornerbacks covering me were about, you know, 5'8", 5'9", you know, so I had a better chance. You know, once you get me on the line, I got to face some guys about my size. So, you know, playing wide receiver was, I had a lot of fun doing that.
Teammates talk about how invested you are in them. When you were a young player, who was a model for you as a veteran along those lines that was invested in teammates?
Wow. Being here with the Yankees, we had quite a few. One that comes to mind always is Carlos Beltran. You know, he was here for a couple of years. You know, just the time he spent with me in the outfield talking. Like, I remember I look back at a time we were working on cuts and relays on one of the backfields, and it was me and him out in right field. And, you know, instead of us doing cuts and relays, you know, he kind of just waved out the coaches, and we just sat out there and just kind of talked about the game. And, you know, I kind of asked him, like, hey, how do you handle, you know, the ups and downs of the game? How do you handle a good month? How do you handle, you know, going from being the best player in the game to also you have a bad month and you're the worst player in the game? Like, what's that like? And he kind of just, you know, told me a couple stories about how his rookie year, he starts off hot, everything's great, and then he has a couple bad months. But at the end of the year, his stats, you know, are what they are. Then also in his sophomore year, starts the year off, you know, terrible, has a bad April and May, all of a sudden works through at the end of the year. You know, his stats are what they were his rookie year when he started off hot. So he said, never worry about, you know, how you start. It's just, you know, keep plugging away every single day and trying to improve.
You rarely outwardly complain about ball strike calls by umpires, and yet there are numbers that show there are a lot of missed calls against you. What's your thinking in terms of your decision about that interaction?
You know, I do speak my mind. You know, I try to do it in a way that doesn't, you know, show up the umpire, show up the guy, you know, back there, you know, working just like I am, you know. So I try to just, you know, ask them, hey, where do you got that? Or, hey, I got that a little off. Or, you know, I just, you know, let them know, you know, try to in a polite way, say that, hey, I disagree with that call. You know, and most guys, you know, usually will tell me, hey, you know, I still think that's there. Hey, you were right. That was off. And, you know, my line of thinking is, you know, if it's my first at bat and, you know, I get a bad call on me, well, I still got to go up there 4 more times. You know, I might go up there and with the game's on the line, and I don't want the umpire behind home plate, you know, kind of holding a grudge or holding something over my head to where that fringy call, he might call again, you know. So I just try to, you know, speak my mind, move on, and, you know, just get ready for the next play.
Describe your interaction with the judges' chambers.
Oh, we got some great fans out there. They used to be wearing, they used to have the robes and everything out there. This year, I don't see too many robes, but I try to toss a ball up there every now and then. And you know, that section's usually pretty loud. They usually come with a couple signs, and that was a cool addition to Yankee Stadium.
You were adopted. When you meet a kid who was adopted, what do you tell them?
Wow. I just try to remind them how lucky they are. You know, someone adopted them, someone loved them that much. They wanted to, you know, bring them into their family and, you know, just enjoy that experience. You know, people may say things, you don't look like your parents, you don't look like your mom, you don't look like your dad, but that doesn't matter. They love you just the same. And, you know, just enjoy that. You know, I was blessed to be adopted by my parents and my family. And, you know, I never felt like I was treated any differently. And, you know, because sometimes it's tough for kids, you know, when you're growing up and, you know, you see other friends and everyone looks the same and, you know, your family looks a little different, but, you know, the love is always there.
Red Sox-Yankees rivalry is one of the most prominent in sports. Who's a Red Sox player you love competing against?
Oh, Bogarts and Devers. You know, those two over there are doing something special this year. I've been doing something special for quite a few years. Those are two guys that bring it every single day. They're consistent. You know, every single time they step up to play with runners on base, you know, I'm sweating a little bit in the outfield because I know that, you know, any pitch, it doesn't matter the count, you know, they can, you know, put the bat on the ball and do some damage. So those are two guys that, you know, I just love. They bring the energy, they have fun, and just love competing against them.
What would be a milestone that would be especially meaningful for you?
I think getting a triple crown. I think getting a triple crown a year, you know, one of my favorite players, you know, to watch is Miguel Cabrera. And, you know, for him to win a triple crown, you know, you got to have the best average in the game, the homers, the RBIs. You know, you just got to be a well-rounded hitter, you know, to be able to hit all those categories. So I think that's something that in my career, if I could accomplish that, I think that would mean a lot, you know, just to show, you know, the consistency on the side of, you know, being able to put the ball in play, you know, being able to drive guys in, and to be able to hit the long ball. You know, I think having all three of those, you know, kind of shows that you're a complete, you know, complete hitter.
Aaron, this is great. Thanks for the time.
No, thank you. Great seeing you.
So, Taylor, I was so moved by Aaron Judge's answer about adoption. You know, I've had friends who've adopted kids. I don't think I've ever heard anyone explain it that well. The interesting thing is, you know, he is generally very private talking about, you know, his own adoption situation. I tried to give him a question, and I figured he probably had been asked by kids who'd been adopted, and his answer just really moved me.
Yeah, I did not even know he was adopted. You've been hyping up this, you know, playing this interview. You're like, oh, wait till the end. Got a good answer out of him. So I didn't realize that. And it was so beautiful. I feel like it should be like on a billboard and like a PSA or something. It was truly an impactful statement. And it sounds like he deploys that, you know, here and there, which is nice to see.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Monday. Before we get into that really quickly, don't forget to check out new episodes of The Low Post and The Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst. They're doing their rapid reaction immediately after these NBA Finals games. The Bucks, they're up 3-2 in the series now. An iconic Giannis sequence there with Drew Holiday picking Chris Paul's pocket and tossing it up for the slam. It was very exciting at the end of that game. They got Nick Nurse on to talk about it, head coach of the Raptors. You can find that wherever you listen to your podcast. On to the tweets. Elizabeth Hart at eHart Tweets writes in, what, if any, effect do you think it will have on the Blue Jays roster that only 13 current members of the club have actually played home games at the Rogers Center?
I don't think that'll make any difference. I think the players immediately are going to feel a difference being in a larger venue, probably a louder venue, and having home fans, because you know the fans in Toronto will be absolutely psyched to respond to the Blue Jays players. Pretty cool news.
Absolutely. Let's go to Brian Stoneking at School of Sweat in Our Hearts. Brian writes in, is there really anybody on the market that would actually make an impact? Moves happen, but mostly they're insignificant. It's rare to see a Manny to the Dodgers, CeCe to the Brewers, Nomar leaving the Red Sox type of impact, isn't it?
I do think there are potentially some guys who could be difference making. Like, for example, do you like my idea with the Red Sox, you know, getting a 2-for deal with the Cubs? For Craig Kimbrell and Anthony Rizzo.
You could
see those guys being part of a dog pile for the Red Sox in October.
Last one for today, P.K. Steinberg at P.K. Steinberg writes in, with the Cubs getting a first base prospect, Bryce Ball for Jock Peterson, does that have ramifications for Freeman's next contract in Atlanta and Rizzo's fate in Chicago?
No, I don't think so. I think what's going to happen with Freeman is that everyone's going to just wait until they see what happens with the labor situation. That'll give them a fuller context of what the money's going to be, you know, where the Braves' payroll is going to be. and then the organization will react accordingly. Freddie Freeman will react accordingly to that. And look, when in a lot of cases, when these deals go down, you hear about a prospect and he's kind of talked up a little bit. Everybody I talked to said that that this particular prospect in moving this deal is not a high-end guy. You know, he's a guy who has demonstrated some bat speed and he's got a ton of swing and miss, and so he's going to have to progress. I don't think anybody looks at him as being a potentially an impact player.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Our man, Mr. Malibu, the intern, Nathan, will be scouring through those this evening. So send him some good ones, please. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Absolutely. That's it for today. My thanks to Aaron Judge, to Xander Bogaerts, to Tim Kirchin, to Taylor Schwenk. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we have to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.